The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone. The views and opinions expressed are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but lately, religion is so volatile in the news. The mosque at Ground Zero looks like Muslims are trying to provoke not only Americans, but specifically the Christians and Jews in America. The pastor from Florida and all this stuff about burning the Quran and how that's going to provoke Muslims. And on last week's show, I spent a lot of time talking about all the controversy involving Glenn Beck and his Mormonism. I like Glenn Beck. But there's people that won't work with him because he's a Mormon. Well, beneath this sea of confusion, beneath this fast-paced exchange of volatile electronic words, there is a real God with real love, and he wants to reach out to you. Meanwhile, related to the subject of religious provocation is moral provocation, this time in the form of a bill. Congressman Barney Frank, you got to hold on to your seats for this. Congressman Barney Frank is introducing a bill that would force all businesses to have genderless bathrooms. This is being done, as always, in the name of tolerance. That's right. It's time for our tolerance update. Remember, tolerance is the only way to bring love to the world, and what the world needs is love. Evidently, doors marked male or female show discrimination to transgenders, homosexuals, etc. I hope I don't need to say much about this one. I'd prefer to think the stand-on-its-head logic of our times is finally sinking in. Kiss male and female privacy goodbye. If this goes into law, no business bathroom, if it's big enough to accommodate more than one person as opposed to the small one where a single occupant locks the door, no business bathroom will be able to guarantee any kind of comfortable buffer zone. I mean, this isn't rocket science. Whenever conservatives vote against gay marriage or other laws that supposedly are about nothing but equality, they find their own rights in jeopardy. In the name of providing human rights for some, a fundamental human right and human dignity is being ripped away from most. The reason is simple. Human beings by nature are not satisfied. When activists are given an inch, it is only their cue to take a mile. I won't insult your intelligence by saying any more. I think you get the idea. All kinds of other rights also weigh in the balance, but I've already talked a lot about those on previous programs. As for Barney's fun bill, petitions are going around to stop it. I do not assume for a second that our current Congress gives a hang what the majority of the population thinks, but why not sign it anyway? And come November, come quickly. Well, that's our tolerance update. Remember, tolerance is the only way to bring love to the world, and what the world needs is love. Well, questions of morality should be of concern to anybody, religious or atheist. Another subject that should be of concern is the subject of anti-Semitism, something I also spoke about a great deal last week when talking about the new peace process between Israel and the Palestinians. Here, too, one need not be religious to merely be concerned about human rights and historical revision. I got to tell you this. I used to enjoy reading Time magazine. In fact, I'll go you one better. Time magazine is the only periodical I have ever subscribed to. How sad to see this once prestigious collection of print degenerate into a sea of irresponsible, sensationalist journalism, unmatched even by the National Enquirer. I'm telling you, it reeks of cowardly political correctness, brainwashed propaganda, and vain, pitiful attempts to restore its dying readership in the wake of internet media reformation. The cover story of this week's Time magazine says, "Why Israel Doesn't Want Peace." I see. Oh, yeah. Israel doesn't want peace. It's Israel that doesn't want the peace. I guess they didn't want peace when they gave back the Sinai to Egypt. You will recall that they only took the Sinai in the first place because then President Nasser of Egypt bragged about how he would destroy Israel, not push for a two-state solution, but destroy her. Years later, under a Jimmy Carter peace treaty, Israel gave the land back. And was Israel against peace when she returned the Gaza Strip to the Palestinians? Actually, she was accused of thwarting the peace process soon afterwards. How? Why? Well, you really have to follow the rational train of thought in this one. You see, after Israel withdrew from Gaza, the Palestinians, under the direction and influence of that kind organization Hamas, thanked their Israeli neighbors by firing rockets across the new Gaza border day after day, week after week, month after month. When Israel retaliates or stops ships carrying additional weapon supplies for Gaza, she is viewed as a villain. I think the time has come to try this a whole new way. Here's my suggestion. Israel should stop giving back land. That's it. That's it. No more land. No more peace talks. Just cease and desist and let the chips fall where they may. I know the world will criticize her for such a decision, but in case you haven't noticed by now, Israel gets condemned no matter what she does. So what difference could it possibly make to her reputation? None. What difference will it make to Israel? Well, she'll be safe. That's something, isn't it? Basically speaking, that land is theirs anyway. Their historical claim goes back to ancient times, and just because the Romans displaced her, just because they conquered the Jews and scattered them, that doesn't mean the Jewish people had no right to return to their homeland years later when the League of Nations invited them to do just exactly that. A remnant of Jews had remained in the land those past 2,000 years anyway. Yes, Arabs were there too, as a result of Muslim expansion in the 600s and other expansions later. The Balfour Declaration promised the Jews all of what we today call Israel, all of what we today call Jordan, and most of what we today call occupied territory, occupied only because Israel won a war when a bunch of collaborating nations chose to attack and annihilate her in the 60s. I would say that after Great Britain sold 75% of the promised land to the Arabs behind the backs of the Jews, creating the country of Jordan, I would say that that meant enough land had been taken from Israel. I would say that when the Arabs wanted the additional 25% and Israel agreed, in accordance with the then new United Nations, to partition the territory once again, that enough land was taken away from Israel. The Arabs rejected this two-state solution, leading to the 1948 war, and the displaced Arabs, later changing their names to Palestinians in the 1960s. Even today, most Israelis are in favor of a two-state solution, if only it will bring peace. But it won't bring peace. As I said in last week's program, once there is a separate Palestinian state, the Palestinians will take the next step and call for the right of return. My source for this assumption? The Palestinians. That is just exactly what they say they will do, but the world isn't listening. The Palestinians do not really want a two-state solution. They are not willing to share the land.
When Bob Siegel says that the Palestinians are unwilling to share the land with Israel, he doesn't mean to imply that they aren't willing to share any of the land.
Thank you, Dan. We always appreciate the special assistance of Disclaimer Dan.
Actually, the Palestinians only want the surface of the land. They are happy to bury just as many Jews as possible beneath the surface.
Here's the thing. When Israel keeps giving back land, she involuntarily puts forth the signal that the land was never hers in the first place. That causes the Arabs to ask for even more land. It will never end until there is no more Israel. The land belongs to the Israelis. Even if you don't believe it was a gift from God, as I do, the human rights-related historical facts are undeniable to anyone who wants to look history honestly and square in the eye. My advice to Israel, give back no more land. My advice to Time Magazine, give back the money to anybody unfortunate enough to still subscribe to your thoughtless, shameful, brain-dead publication.
This land.
Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life, but Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170, 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions at bobsiegel.net.
Since he can't play the blame Bush card every day, he occasionally pulls his Republicans are the party of no card from the bottom of the deck. You can tell he is insufferably pleased with himself over this one, as if the most clever strategy in the history of politics appeared to him like an epiphany on Mount Sinai. Our president is actually a very intelligent person, so there can be only one explanation to such an infantile maneuver. He's hoping the high majority of the country is just that stupid. To nurture this hope, he reminds himself that he was voted into office. No, I do not believe every person who voted for the man is stupid. Some were merely misled or caught up in the moment. Besides, many who supported Obama are waking up, but when he continues with such drivel, it speaks low for his opinion of his own followers, showing contempt for the very people who put him in office. in front of a hysterically laughing crowd at the V&M Star in Youngstown, Ohio, President Obama insisted Republicans would say no even if he told them the sky was blue. Oh, my sides. I guess it's time to revisit the subject of yes and no once again. I may as well start at the children's level since our president is talking to us like children. Is no always a bad word? No, you cannot have any more candy, a mother tells her young ones. No, you cannot play in the street, she also says. No commentary necessary for that, right? Good, then let's move upward in ages a bit. When a woman says no to a man's advances, should the guy respond by calling her the party of no? No means no. It's actually a popular saying, unless we're talking about Republicans saying no to Democrats. That, of course, is a foul. How about some historical perspective? Is it good that the colonists said no to English taxation without representation? Was it good that we fought a civil war saying no to slavery? Should we continue to say no to racism? Do we say no to murder? Okay, we agree then. Words such as yes or no are neutral. They take on meaning only when we decide what we are saying yes or no to. Increasingly larger amounts of people are happy to see Republicans saying no to policies that endanger our national security, paralyze the private sector, and sue states like Arizona for simply enforcing federal law. Oh, one last thing. Obama was a senator when George Bush was president. Just thought I'd mention that in case anybody had forgotten. How many of Bush's policies did Senator Obama himself say no to? I guess back in those days, Democrats were the party of no. Still, I suppose yes does sound like a more positive word, so be it. Say yes to voting Democrats out of office this November. On the other hand, if you like Democrats, then you may choose to say no. And if you make that choice, please deal with it when others also reserve the right to say no. But something far more serious has been going on in the news this last week. I have spoken much about Islam, but this is my first and hopefully last monologue on the infamous Terry Jones saga. Rarely do we see one news story spiral into such a panorama of emotional and philosophical discussions. Since it is human nature to react first and listen second, people find themselves starting with one argument, only to get whisked into strange new territory, unaware of the cyclone which blew them there. We desperately need a strainer big enough to retain only the important points from this sea of varied ideas. Hopefully, my monologue will provide at least a modicum of focus and clarity. When I first turned on the news this last Thursday morning, Pastor Terry Jones of the Dove World Outreach Center, a big name for a small church in Gainesville, Florida, this Pastor Terry Jones was still planning at that time a public burning of the Quran on Saturday, the anniversary of 9/11. He never ended up doing it, and we're all very grateful, but at that time he was planning to. And he said, and I'm quoting him, "This book is not a book of peace. This book is responsible for 9/11. Then sometime in the afternoon, everything changed. Jones said he had secured a meeting with Faisal Rauf, the no less controversial imam who will head a mosque being built on the vicinity of Ground Zero. And many people, something like 65% of Americans polled, said they don't want that built there. In exchange for an alleged promise to relocate this provocative mosque, Jones promised to cancel his barbecue, which had become the talk of the town. And then early in the evening, the story morphed once again. This time, Jones said his concern for not burning the books was a concern for the safety of our Afghanistan troops, endangered by those fanatical elements who viewed his Quran destruction as the worst kind of sacrilege. It was interesting seeing two completely unrelated reasons for pulling the plug, but then the FBI had visited Jones earlier, and maybe that secret undisclosed little huddle had something to do with the pastor's two back-to-back changes of heart. In any event, Jones' book burning is off, even as Rauf continues to insist more emphatically that his mosque is coming soon to a theater near Ground Zero. The mere suggestion of book burning creeps me out. It gives me the horrors. I realize Nazi analogies are used to death these days by anyone who wants to shut up an opponent, but in this specific case, we really are talking about something the Nazis actually did. In fact, the burning of books was one of Hitler's very early acts for the obvious reason of controlling information. No, I am not comparing Pastor Jones to Hitler. I'm not comparing him to Hitler. But yes, I am comparing this one specific proposed action to an action of Hitler. Words may be terrible. Words may even be dangerous, but they are to be fought only with other words. We fight words with words. The moment we fight them by suppressing them, the good words die with the bad words. Still, there's so much more going on here than the simple question of whether or not books should be burned. One little church in Florida has created a national dialogue of overlapping, pretzel-twisted subjects, from the safety of our troops in Afghanistan to the proposed mosque at Ground Zero, to notions of good, peaceful Muslims as opposed to bad, violent Muslims, to First Amendment discussions, to political consistency, or lack thereof, to mind reading itself. Let me remove that last checker from the board immediately, since it seems the most tangential and least important part of the discussion. I keep hearing all kinds of speculation about Pastor Jones' motives, how this is merely a sensationalist attempt to put a world spotlight on his otherwise obscure 50-member church. The man may indeed be a sensationalist. It's not for me to say. Evidently, I don't have as much gifted insight as our television talking heads. Since other more important issues are related to this news story, many of them a matter of freedom, life, and death, why waste time on a question that will never be answered anyway until the day Pastor Jones stands before God? On the other hand, there is one relevant discussion related to the size of his congregation, and I'll tell you what that relevant discussion is when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. They say a man's home is his castle, so when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785, that's 447-8785, for W&S Electric, Incorporated, license number 480539, W&S Electric. Welcome back to our program. We're talking about the book burning, which got called off, but did you know that there are all kinds of American flag burnings and violence all over the world just because this guy might have done that? How did news of this small, otherwise unnoticed church's calendar of events get circulated so quickly? A church with a congregation of only 50? I realize the original couriers were bloggers, but if you'll pardon my play on words, the flame was fanned by our news media. And so for those who feared that American lives could be in danger from militant Muslims as a result of this potential incident, for those of you who think the pastor should be held responsible for every related death, is the media equally culpable? To their credit, the Associated Press said it would not film the book burning, but they still intended to be on the site interviewing people and reporting the event if it had happened. Look how inflated this once scrawny inner tube became. As a matter of fact, the media has done more than endanger lives. They have also contributed to the endangerment of freedom. And people, this leads to my bottom line. No, I do not believe the Quran or any book should be burned, but I fear the hysteria created by the media in cases such as this will someday jeopardize our right to speak against the Quran at a time when a brainwashed, politically correct nation needs a sobering wake-up call before she sleeps away her freedom. This may be the only relevant truth masked by mixed messages as our emotions go on a roller coaster ride. One second up, one second down, wanting to say yes or no as the subject changes faster than flashing images on MTV video. First, you want to agree with a statement. The next minute, you need to disagree with a related but much different proposition. It can be confusing. We want to stand by our yeses when affirmation is needed, and we want to guard our noes when compromise waits in the wings. With that in mind, maybe the label yes or no may just help to sift through the fog until a clear front seat window view becomes painfully but undeniably apparent. Yes and no were useful words in our previous discussion. Let's try them again. No, Pastor Jones should not burn copies of the Quran. Yes, he still has a constitutional right to do so. No, that is not a good reason for him to burn the book. It would have been an incredibly stupid gesture given the already electrified atmosphere related to the subject of Islam. However, yes, Pastor Jones is correct to take issue with the book itself, despite his exaggerated methods of protest. Yes, the Quran really is a book filled with commands of jihad. It also contains strong anti-Christian and anti-Semitic language. No, these are not the only verses in the Quran. Yes, there are also verses which talk about peace, but both sets of scriptural passages are in there. Yes, many Muslims focus only on the peaceful verses. Yes, many other Muslims take the jihad command seriously. Yes, it is possible to take verses out of context, but the only true authentic context is verified by asking what the original author truly meant to say. Muhammad himself conquered with a sword. How do you think he took Mecca? Therefore, it is fairly obvious, albeit not politically correct, to understand that the jihad commands were intended by Muhammad to be taken literally and not figuratively. Yes, such an ominous action as book burning will undoubtedly lead to eventual hate speech legislation, but no, it shouldn't. In the name of banning book burnings, those of us who wish to seriously challenge the Quran through the peaceful exchange of words and a modest little portion of our Constitution called the First Amendment, maybe you've heard of it, we will find cherished free speech thrown out like a baby with the bathwater. If you think I'm exaggerating my concern, I remind you that it is already against the law to speak against Islam in Canada. In the meantime, Pastor Jones is being censored on the Internet. Dan Goodgame, a spokesman for the web host company Rackspace Hosting, said two websites operated by the Dove World Outreach Center are being closed down. And listen to how they talk about this news in USA Today. I'm reading from the online version of USA Today, September the 9th, 2010, and you're going to love this heading. It's under the heading, The Inconvenient Constitution. Doesn't a heading like that give you the chills? The Inconvenient Constitution. And it says in there, the incident was a reminder of how inconvenient the Constitution can be. The First Amendment, as it's been interpreted, would probably not win if it were put to a vote, said Gillers, whose media law class discussed the case. It is very hard to explain to people why this sort of conduct should be permitted. No, we do not want to lose our rights to freedom of speech. But yes, Pastor Jones should have been talked out of burning those Qurans, even by our president, who said, this is a recruitment bonanza for Al-Qaeda. You know you could have serious violence in places like Pakistan or Afghanistan. Obama went on to say that under U.S. law, Pastor Jones has a right to his actions, but it is not incumbent upon human beings to do every single thing that are allowed. Speaking on national television Thursday morning, Obama urged Jones to listen to those better angels. Well, I think that's good advice, but I also find it interesting. Isn't that what most people were saying about Faisal Rauf's plan to build a mosque on the vicinity of Ground Zero? But no, Obama has not tried to talk Faisal Rauf into ceasing his unpopular construction plans. Obama couldn't bring himself to say that this was an inappropriate action and a slap in the face to 3,000 9/11 victims. And while we're in the neighborhood of New York City, yes, Rauf also has a constitutional right to express himself with offensive actions such as a Ground Zero mosque, assuming the man is not a militant Muslim who believes in overthrowing the very constitution he calls upon to protect his current rights, a huge assumption, inasmuch as he has praised Hamas in Arabic and refused to renounce Hamas in English, which means he probably should not be allowed to build a mosque anywhere. We shouldn't be talking about where he builds the mosque. This guy should not be allowed to build a mosque anywhere, but Yes, hypothetically, if none of the data I just mentioned were accurate, then in that case, he or any other peaceful Muslim should be allowed to build a mosque any place they want, but no, he should not build this one on Ground Zero, for even if he thought he had the nicest intentions, the act still displays the same bad taste and provocative behavior as the book burning by Pastor Jones, who also claims, incidentally, to have the best of intentions. Yes, the burning of the Quran would inspire violence from Muslims toward Americans in foreign countries. No, that will not make Pastor Jones responsible. Those responsible for murder and violence are the ones who commit murder and violence. Let me say that again. Those responsible for murder and violence are the ones who commit murder and violence. And no, such acts of violence and terror do not really need much inspiration from many Muslims these days. Had it not been the Burning Book of the Month Club, it would have been something else. When a Danish newspaper published a cartoon of Mohammed, riots and burnings broke out all over the world. When Dutch film director Theo van Gogh made a movie about the mistreatment of women in Muslim countries, he was stabbed to death on the street in broad daylight. Gee, that ought to teach us to stop calling Islam a violent religion. When it was falsely reported that an American prison guard in Guantanamo Bay flushed a Quran down the toilet, Muslims committed murders in retaliation. But that's nothing. Some Muslims have threatened violence if an infidel so much as touches the Quran. Ironically, I do not recall much Muslim outrage, or much world outrage for that matter, when Jewish synagogues were burnt down immediately after Israel turned Gaza over to the Palestinians. Meanwhile, countless Jewish and Christian organizations all over America have swiftly and vehemently condemned the plans of Pastor Jones, but this hasn't stopped Muslims all over the world from burning American flags and expressing outrage at yet even more American Muslim hatred. Those who would chastise us to not blame all Muslims for the action of a few terrorist extremists have no problem whatsoever indicting all Christians for the actions of a 50-member church. We'll return to the Bob Siegel Show. Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. My friend Dan Summers is going to tell us about a very exciting, very local tea party this weekend. I'm going to bring him on in just a couple of minutes. Let me finish this very important discussion about the book burning kind of juxtaposed against the mosque at Ground Zero that they're proposing. And we were talking about the different things that recruit terrorists. They were saying burning the Quran is going to recruit terrorists. Well, if you sneeze in America, you can recruit a terrorist. Other events credited with recruiting terrorists include, of course, the Iraq War, the Second Iraq War, and the Afghanistan War. Oddly enough, neither of those events had happened yet when Osama bin Laden orchestrated the attack on 9/11. So why did they do that if they weren't provoked? Well, as a matter of fact, bin Laden told us quite plainly why the Pentagon and World Trade Center were attacked. The American infidels had dared to set foot on Saudi Arabian soil. That's true. Guilty as charged, we did indeed land our troops in Saudi Arabia to protect Saudi Arabia from Iraq, their enemy country, which had just conquered Kuwait, occupied Kuwait, and was arming up to attack Saudi Arabia. Quite some time later, a letter from Al-Qaeda said, "Americans, be on notice, convert to Islam, or die. It did not say, hey, we know you Americans are split about the war and equally divided over how to interpret Islam. To those of you on the left who defend us in such a tolerant, sensitive, politically correct way, golly gee and shucks, we sure appreciate you. No, the command to convert or die was there for all Americans, period. But then, that is the big elephant in the room, isn't it? The real recruiting tool for terrorism and anti-American hatred is the Quran itself. Much as the sophisticated elite hate to hear this, they hate it, the command to convert or destroy the infidel is found in their sacred scriptures. Don't take my word for it. Look it up, but try to look it up without touching it or somebody might kill you. It's in Surah 9. No, that does not mean I approve of burning the book. And yes, I am aware of the many, many Muslims who do not take Surah 9 seriously, either reinterpreting the passage or ignoring it altogether, but the passage exists. No, people should not be reading it. They should not be taking it seriously. But the terrorists are reading it, and you know what? They are taking it seriously. Perhaps Obama's inconsistency of concern is enlightened when we remember that the Ground Zero Mosque creates no parallel fear of violent retaliation from Christians, Jews, or other religions. And with that, we have come full circle, my friends. Even as we admit that the Quran should not be burned, it is high time for an honest discussion about the action and the action that's inspired by the words contained in that little book. Fazarov has provided up to now a dishonest discussion, but even he explained last week on Larry King Live why that mosque absolutely has to be completed. I'm quoting from Fazarov. There is a certain anger here, no doubt, but if you don't do this right, anger will explode in the Muslim world. If this is not handled correctly, this crisis could become much bigger than the Danish cartoon crisis, which resulted in attacks on Danish embassies in various parts of the Muslim world, and we have a much larger footprint in the Muslim world. If we don't handle this crisis correctly, it could become something which could really become very, very dangerous indeed. Those are the words of Fazarov. See how it all works? See how it works? Better not burn any Qurans. Okay, 99.9% of us didn't want to do that anyway. But it doesn't end there. Better not forbid that mosque at Ground Zero either. Better not even raise your voice in protest, for that makes you hateful and anti-Muslim. And better not draw Muhammad. Better not make movies about Muslim violence or even discuss Muslim violence. In England, a man was arrested for telling his neighbor that Muslims were responsible for 9/11. And in this same merry old England, many schools stopped teaching on the Holocaust because Muslims found it offensive. Continuing with the taboo list, better not wage wars against countries that harbor Muslim terrorists. Finally, how dare we even open the Quran and show those verses which command all the violence? How dare we? We must carefully restrain our words and our actions, even as outspoken Muslims call other Muslims to wage war. Sooner or later, the truth will eventually sink in. If we really want to stop inciting Muslim violence, we need to either convert or basically just stop existing. Our very existence is an insult. Under most circumstances, such ludicrous demands would never be taken seriously, never. But the politically correct individual makes a strange bedfellow with the jihadist. If we go the way of Canada, making it against the law to speak against Islam, all that will have been accomplished is a more sanitized form of book burning called censorship. Once it is against the law to call Islam a violent religion, brace yourself for violence at the hands of Muslims like you've never seen before. We can never approve book burnings. But we'd be well advised to at least pay attention to the concern which inspired this particular book burning that never took place anyway. Even our president, who insists Islam is a religion of peace, was desperate to stop the book burning. Why? For fear of American lives, and his favorite imam has expressed that exact same fear should the Ground Zero Mosque not be built. Doesn't that speak volumes? Let me introduce now, we're going to go to the phones, and I'm going to introduce my very good friend, Dan Summer. Dan, welcome to our program.
Mr. Siegel, it's a pleasure to be here.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, sir. Well, you and I are both going to be involved in an event this weekend, but I'm going to let you tell our audience about it.
Well, Bob, the Tea Party has gotten behind Nick Popovich, who's a young man, a courageous man, who's running for Congress in the 51st Assembly District. His opponent is Bob Filner. And the Tea Parties in San Diego County are getting behind Mr. Popovich. Former Congressman Duncan Hunter says that this race is the most important race in the entire county this year. And so everybody in the county is essentially involved in getting Mr. Popovich elected.
Well, it sounds pretty exciting. Now, can you give us some details about the where's and the when's? And I'm assuming there's no cost to this.
Of course not. There's no cost.
Never cost to a Tea Party.
The Tea Party is sponsoring two events, one in Chula Vista at 10 a.m., and you're going to MC that, and one out in El Cajon at 1 o'clock. So we're kind of essentially doing a double team here this coming Saturday, the 18th. One event out west and one event out east, both of them in the 51st Congressional District.
Okay, this will be kind of fun because it'll kind of be in the backyard of Popovich's opponent, so I like that. Give out the website. Do you have this on the Ramona Teed website, Dan?
Well, it's on the Ramona Teed website, but you can also contact Nick Popovich at nickpopovichforcongress.com.
Okay.
That's his website. You can get all the details.
We're getting interference over the phone there, Dan. I don't know if that's... Okay, you there, Dan?
I'm good.
Okay, good. All right, nickpopovich.com. It's going to be a blast. Give the time one more time, Dan.
10 o'clock Saturday morning in Chula Vista at the Memorial Bowl, which is 373 Parkway. It's a great little park. We're going to have a spectacular stage presentation and a lot of great speakers. And then 1 o'clock out in El Cajon at the amphitheater by the courthouse, which is 200 Civic Center Way.
Okay, and like Dan told you, I will be emceeing that, so I would love to meet some of you, see the mug behind this voice. Dan, thanks a lot. I will see you on Saturday, and
thank
we will be
so much,
right
Tom.
Back.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's daily blog on townhall.com. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. BobSiegel.net.
This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show four nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. If you would like to reach us, you can reach us by phone, of course, and also questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel.net. Now, concerning my comments about Obama calling Republicans the party of no, Gwendolyn takes serious issue with me. She says, someone has to keep reminding us how we got into this mess. Put the blame where it rests on the Bush administration and now the party of no. Well, I appreciate the comment, Gwendolyn. I really do. But if you'll indulge me for a moment, I have a couple of questions for you. Who was in control of Congress the last 2 years of the Bush administration? The Democrats. Who was putting pressure on banks to give out loans to people who did not qualify? The Democrats. When did the housing market crash, threatening the banks during those 2 years? With the Democrats. Who's being critical of the Democrats right now? I myself, a Democrat. But there are a few people on Facebook who liked what I had to say about that. Anne says, I love this commentary, Bob. Deborah also says, love it. Maureen says, how about the party of no way? I like that. Concerning the blog version of what I was talking about with the Quran and the book burning, got some interesting comments. Adam and Marietta says, wow, great blog, Bob. I love how you can express exactly how I feel without me having to write it, probably because I couldn't. Thanks. And another Bob, our friend Bob in North Carolina, says, good one, Centurion. Well, thank you for the promotion. Bob didn't know I was in the military at all. Mike in Champaign, Illinois, says, very logical, something the PC hate. Patty on Facebook says she liked what I have to say. Deborah on Facebook says, I appreciate your perspective on this, Bob, especially this viewpoint, which seems to go largely unnoticed by many Americans. And then she quotes me, even our president, who insists Islam is a religion of peace, was desperate to stop the book burning for fear of American lives. Anne on Facebook says, well done again, Bob. You are definitely on a roll. Maureen says, Anne, I was thinking the same thing myself. Go, Bob. George on Facebook says, excellent. Thanks again. Well, thank you for the encouragement, George, and thank you for the encouragement, all of you. Rick says, I just listened to your broadcast. Can evangelical Christians partner with Mormons? That was last week's broadcast. You can still hear that on my website, bobsiegel.net. So Rick listened to that. He says, I thought it was very good. If you're interested, I wrote an article titled The Term Cult, Defined and Related Issues. Cult, Defined and Related Issues, title of his article. He says it's very much what I said, and he sent me a link. Well, I would be happy to take a look at that, Rick. And then Deborah also listened to that broadcast. She says, excellent broadcast. Thank you for addressing this. You're the first one I've heard do so publicly. A few of my friends questioned some of my choices this past voting season based solely on the fact that some of our local candidates are Mormon. You are a reliable source for sound and biblical reasons why this does not pose a problem. You also effectively address clearly and plainly some of those areas where Mormons differ from Christians. Regarding the literary version of my points about Beck and Mormonism, Marion, Michigan writes, nice article, Bob. I would like to print this and offer it for reading at my Bible study group. Would it be okay? This topic came forward during one session, and you put it much more clearly than I did. Guess that's why you make your living writing, and I don't. Ha! She says, ha, in big letters. You said it like I wished I had. Let me know. Mary, you're more than welcome to use it, but this is very important, Mary. If somebody ever pays you $1 million for it, I want a cut. Prior than that, I'll probably be okay. Not really. I could use $10, but you're welcome to it, Mary. You're welcome to it. Karen from Facebook, responding to the same article, says, the one about Mormonism, can't say I don't totally agree with you on every point. I have a good one to tell. We used to always shop in Salt Lake City over Thanksgiving. We could never leave without stepping into the big Mormon temple downtown so my husband could sign a visitor card. Nothing brings them to your door faster than that. And now she writes, ha. A lot of people like to say ha today. She says, talk about not knowing what hit them. Captive audience in your own living room. Truth spoken, true gospel given. When you study Mormonism, as you and my husband have point by point, they lose the debate. Missionary work done without stepping outside. And he could drink a cup of coffee, even if they had to refuse. Mormons aren't allowed to drink coffee because it has caffeine. Well, thank you for sharing that, Sharon. And yes, it is sad to see so many well-intentioned people deceived, but sounds like you and your husband are quite on the ball. Blessings to you. I spoke a lot about Glenn Beck last week, folks. He's loved by many. He's hated by many. Why is he also hated? I'm going to tell you exactly why. Quite simply, because he speaks the truth. The truth can be very uncomfortable. I support the fact that he speaks the truth. I support that statement by merely pointing to a rather big, undeniable elephant in the room. Nobody who criticizes the man can answer his assertions with actual facts. They instead resort to the trump card of name-calling. When people resort to name-calling, they've thrown the argument. Now, when I say he speaks the truth, I am, of course, generalizing. He does talk accurately on the most crucial issues that divide and threaten our great nation with extinction. I do not intend, however, to suggest that I agree with every single one of Beck's viewpoints, and obviously I made my disagreement with his Mormonism very clear last week. But for now, I only want to ponder the historical significance from a couple of weeks ago, that Saturday, August 20th, 2010. I wish I could have been there. In my own way, I'm a voice in this same great debate, even though my sphere of influence is microscopic by comparison. On the same day that the Glenn Beck rally was going on, I was emceeing a tea party in the little city of Ramona, California. But these modest pockets of our land have been gathering and growing from the Pacific coast to the Atlantic coast. I made a diary entry on the eve of this Glenn Beck rally, and I wrote this. It was kind of a prayer/diary entry. I want to read it to you. Before I die, I pray that God will have used me to reach whatever corner he decreed my personal participation. May he add my effort toward curbing the precarious times which lurk in the cobwebbed corridors of an uncertain future. May no sin or stupidity on my part quench his plans. May the same be true for the rest of my brothers and sisters, also called by God. That was my prayer. In the meantime, let us all join together and pray for Glenn Beck, a true hero. Folks, never mind what your friends say about him. Most of them have never heard the man for themselves. They are instead repeating something they heard about him. Pray for Beck's protection. Pray for Beck's success. Pray also for our country. Someday, American history books will talk about a great figure, one of several brave individuals who marched to the beat of a different drum and in doing so saved civilization. Success has a thousand fathers. It will be common in the future to speak of Glenn Beck with reverence. You have a rare opportunity to stand by this risk taker ahead of time when it's neither popular nor fashionable to do so. Have courage. I have another Bible question here. I don't know if I'll have time to finish it today, but I will start it. And I'm going to withhold the name of this person since she is talking about a member of her family. I don't give out people's last names anyway, but if somebody's talking about a family member, I withhold their name entirely. She says, Bob. Notice I didn't withhold my name, just hers. I really am Bob. And it's spelled backwards the same way as forwards. So even if you're dyslexic, it's not a problem. Bob, could you please help me out? My son-in-law asked me about this verse last night, and I don't even remember reading it before. Any insight? Thanks so much. The quotation was Luke 19:27. These are the words of Jesus. But those enemies of mine who did not want me to be king over them, bring them here and kill them in front of me. Well, that doesn't sound like Jesus, does it? Okay, well, was that a quotation from Jesus? Yes and no. It was a quotation from a story, a parable Jesus was telling. These are not Jesus' nonfiction words to the crowd. These are the fictitious words of Jesus, the storyteller, and should be viewed no differently than an actor portraying a part. It is analogous to Jesus' second coming on Judgment Day, where those who have not received Christ will not be allowed into his kingdom of heaven. And so unless your son-in-law has never heard of the biblical theology of heaven and hell or the Christian teaching that Jesus is the only way to God, this should not be some new disturbing surprise. Undoubtedly, he already knows you believe in heaven and hell, this relative of yours, and I'm sure he does not like the teaching that those who reject Jesus will end up in hell, and that is a discussion to have with him in its own right. But should your son-in-law make the assertion that this was a discovery that he made, he really hasn't made any new discovery of teaching from Jesus. Instead, he has illustrated the confusion which takes place when people take one verse entirely out of context. Of course, people who go to hell do so because they don't do so because they flunked some theology exam about not believing in Jesus, but rather because they chose not to repent of sin. Jesus and the Holy Spirit indwelling us are the remedies for sin, forgiveness of sin, and power to overcome sin. Those are the things that God has provided. I will see you next week. You are always welcome. Your questions are welcome too.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
At Lexus Escondido, the Golden Opportunity sales event has a silver lining. It's held over. We're just as eager as before to make friends by continuing to put our prices through the refiner's fire to burn off the dross. The result? Pure savings. Like 0.9% financing on all certified pre-owned Lexus and 1.9% financing on new 2010 Lexus IS, ES, and HS hybrids. Again, that's 0.9% financing on all pre-owned Lexus and 1.9% financing on selected new Lexus. It's a season of change and your golden opportunity to save at Lexus Escondido. Details online at LexusEscondido.com. APR financing on premium credit, limited terms. Not all buyers qualify. IS convertibles not included. Come see Lexus Escondido today. Conveniently located adjacent to I-15, west on 9th Avenue, Auto Parkway. Lexus Escondido.
Intelligent talk. 1170 KCBQ, San Diego. And worldwide at KCBQ.com. Intelligent Talk, 1170 KCBQ.
And online at KCBQ.com.
With SRN News, I'm Keith Peters in Washington. The National Hurricane Center's Daniel Brown says Hurricane Igor has rapidly strengthened into a Category 4 storm with winds of over 140 miles an hour. It currently poses no threat to land.
Right now it's moving west at about 14 miles per hour. We are expecting it to turn more to the west-northwest over the next couple of days. Right now the forecast track has it passing well to the north and east of the Leeward Islands. So it looks like at this time there is no immediate...